motion to strike is appropriate in this type of proceeding, but, you know, we just spent about a half hour or so covering three or four letters or emails that don't relate to at all to the allegations that are before this board. We have 280 or 90 different allegations and alleged violations, and these don't relate to any single one of them. These events took place months or in some cases over a year after the time period covered by the complaint. So I don't think that this is relevant material, and I think that, you know, to the extent this board is inclined, that it should exercise, you know, its discretion to either strike it or at the very least to give it minimal effect.
We'll give that under consideration when we deliberate over the evidence, though it was establishing the atmosphere as initiated originally with Caltrans and part of their testimony or part of Mr. Cohen's testimony. So in that light, I've allowed it, but we'll take that under consideration. Yes. This has all been part of the record. Okay. So. We'll have our the panel questions following MCM Cross.
Oh, okay.
I have no questions for Mr.
Okay.
Mr. Cohen?
Yeah.
Just a couple things. One, you stated that you started on the job in April of 07.
April or May. Well, I started going to the job. I was asked in early April if I would take the job, and I had 24 hours to say yes or no because they wanted to figure stuff out. So one of those deals where I said yes, and they wanted me to start to attend meetings as soon as attend some of Ron's going on meetings that he already had to come. There were so many issues on the job. There was many more than just this. We didn't have disposal for, you know, 300,000 yards of material. There were some major issues, access, because the job was, you know, we tried to put it together so fast. So there were some issues that project development would normally have to do that fell into construction. So there was many issues. So they wanted me to start attending meetings as soon as possible. So that's why I say April or May. I didn't really take over until sometime in May.
Okay, thank you. So I have actually just a couple questions about things that, you know, the differentiation between the timing of what happened before that time period, because I noticed in the record that the violations that we're talking about today ceased on May 23rd of 2007, as far as what's actually being discussed today. So you stated that the expenditures for best management practices actually had an augmentation. There was a total of about $2.6 million spent on best management practices and about $1.3, give or take. I'm not heckling the number.
That's very conservative. That's, I'd say, on environmental permit compliance issues. You call it SWEPI, BMP. Okay. There's a variety of ways to look at it. When we went through the job books for this exercise, we just kind of, what work was towards meeting all, not just water board, but, excuse me, I shouldn't have drank that. Not just water board, but there was a lot of stuff for access roads that we put in for fishing game that was an amendment. So everything that was towards permits was that number.
And how much of that would you say was actually implemented after you came on board? So after, say, April or May of 2007 versus the prior period that we're actually discussing today?
The only thing I could say to that, item work, stuff that's in the job for compliance, you could figure both those numbers out, but item work is probably split. There was a lot less extra work. I paid a lot less extra work when I came aboard. I definitely shifted a lot more of the compliance onto MCM. So the previous RE had kind of wrote some change orders, because right off the bat there was some argument about what's required in the permit and what wasn't. This is all before my time, but there's many different things that were decided that, hey, that's extra and above, and some of the cost was split, some of it we paid for, some. So there were some agreements made here and there, and we did some extra work. That's where some of that number comes from.
Okay. So
I don't know if I'm answering your question.
I guess what I'm really trying to get at is, do you feel that more effort and money was spent after May of 2007 on best management practices than prior? And I recognize that that was the second two-thirds of the job, so maybe time has something to do with it.
Yeah, it's a hard one to, I mean, I'd say there was more effort done. I don't, money is a hard one because a lot of the cost was once they cleared the slope, they had to apply a bunch of, because it was bare soil, they had to apply a bunch of soil slope stabilization measures, and that was quite expensive. So that was one lump sum cost at one time. So, effort, I know that we ramped up the effort quite a bit.
Okay. Also, I was wondering, are you familiar with the site-specific stormwater pollution prevention plan?
For our site?
Right.
Yeah, I haven't.
In the red, I assume it's this red book thing.
Oh, the red book
is
actually have all the permits.
Okay.
The red book is something that project development develops. Mm-hmm. It has all the permits and all the agreements that gets handed to the RE. The sweepy is something that the contractor has to put together
right. And
submit to us right off the bat.
And so are you familiar with the sweepy for this project?
Yeah, it's two binders that are, it's been years,
So I'm wondering, specifically in the sweepy, what were the best management practices that were outlined for the trestle deck that were written into that document? There was a lot of talk, and I was a little bit confused about what was the guidelines versus what was actually written in the sweepy.
I believe that, and this is off recollection, the only thing I know for sure is that NS 13 or 3, whatever that, one of our standard BMPs, I believe, is all that was said they would do for the trestle deck. I made them amend that, and we made fabric. It wasn't official. When I came on board, the fabric wasn't an official BMP for the trestle deck. I made them amend that sweepy to say that it officially was. So they took ownership of the fabric. There's many issues, but that's... So I'm not sure what the original... original BMPs are for the sweepy for the trestle.
Thank you. And also, you mentioned that the biological monitoring was not as frequent after you came on the facility, and I was wondering what the reason for that was.
Well, biological monitor, they're required during specific work items, events. When this work is done, that's when it's needed. And most of that work was done by the time I got there. I needed, there was two or three things, work items that I did under my tenure that required a biological monitor.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ms. Harris.
I know that you weren't there in the very beginning, but my question, maybe you can answer this question. Or perhaps Mr. Menendez, as I say, could, I'm not sure. But who decided that it was okay to use pool B? I mean, did someone say you need to do this right here? I mean,
actually,
who was there when that decision was made?
It was Ron Denhire, and I've read the diaries from that just because of this issue. And actually, it was the biological monitor who... Actually, and I already heard that he's not the one, doesn't have that approval, but what happened with that is they knew they'd need to do dewatering. You have to, they need a sediment basin on the river bar. They knew that in the project development process, so they applied for one. Well, I think our biologist just said, we'll put one 100 feet away. Well, there wasn't anything, you couldn't be 100 feet away.
Because
70
of
feet
rock
is the maximum,
wall preventing.
So then they went to the maximum, 70 feet away, because 100 feet didn't exist. And so they went to 70 feet, and there was a depression there, and that's what they used, an existing depression, and it wasn't classified as environmentally sensitive. There are other locations that are pools. I think there's some confusion maybe, but from my understanding, isolated pool B wasn't considered environmentally sensitive habitat for species or anything like that, because it was basically a dry depression at the bottom of the rock face. And they went to 70 feet. And I think that the idea there was, hey, what's the intent of this You know, what's 100 feet away? Why was 100 feet used? And I think that, you know, Dean Pratt and Dave would probably be better one to ask about that because he may have been involved. But I know from reading all the history, they basically went, hey, we need a sediment basin. What were we applying for? Well, just one as far away as you could put it. And it was a mistake to say 100 feet because it didn't exist. 70 feet existed. And I know from talking to Ron that they basically had run it by the environmental monitor thinking, you know, and I understand that approach. You think that, hey, here's a guy who's here to enforce the permits, here to make sure for the permitting agency that we comply, we'll run it by him. He doesn't have that approval. I get that, but that's what happened.
At any time during any of the visits from our staff or from Fish and Game or from any of the other regulatory agencies during the utilization of Pond B, did anyone say to you at any point, you have to stop using this, it can no longer be used, you need to figure out something different, there's a violation occurring right now, and because of that violation, this has to stop being used and we need to figure something else out?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. On the job site, when there was something that appeared to be wrong, per se, or that was going to potentially cause a violation, did the biological monitors report to anyone, or did they just collect data and take pictures, and then whoever happened upon those were able to use those to, like, how we're using them to say, well, we believe these violations occurred? Did the biological monitors give you that information? How was that information collected?
Kind of nailing a very specific good point here. We've changed the way we use biological monitors a lot because of this project. The two biological monitors that we used on this project were not, I'll just comment on one. One for sure had a kind of an agenda against us and really didn't have much experience and was very hostile. And the way the biological monitors are set up is they send their report to our biologist or our environmental planner, not to construction. And that environmental coordinator or planner reviews them and takes any action if necessary. And so construction really doesn't see them. But they're there on the field to basically record, and hopefully, you know, this job, they really didn't work with construction. And why I say we've changed the way we do things now, construction actually wants environmental monitors because now we tend to hire ones that the agencies like, know, are knowledgeable, and will do the right thing, and we help choose that have experience, and they actually help things go smoother. Everyone's happy then. It's actually a benefit to the project instead of this adversarial thing that really occurred on this job. It really showed, it's unfortunate for the project, but it showed a much better way to do things. We've had a lot much better success, in my opinion, with biological monitors since this job. So that there's some issues with the biological monitors on this job, in my opinion.
I would think it would be difficult. I was a biological monitor before in a future life. No, I'm kidding. But I did work as a biological monitor for Fish and Game, and our requirement was that every day at the end of the day, we reported to the contractor's biological monitors, and then they would address the situation within 24 hours. And if they didn't, then a violation was cited. So that's why I ask that. It seems really difficult if for whatever reason, you, the contractor, or whoever, if something's going on and you're not cognizant of it and someone else is, it seems like you should be told so that you can address the situation.
The biological monitor issue was fraught with issues. A lot because one of the biological monitors came from a previous job that he had adversarial relationship with MCM on, straight from that job to this job. So a lot of baggage came, and it was a lot of looking for stuff. And, there were issues on the job.
Issues on every job. I can appreciate that. There's issues getting my kids to clean their room. You have to send an email like some of these that you sent to them, and then their room stays pretty clean for about a week, and everything goes good, and then I have to say, do you need the mean mommy again? And then we get the room clean. So, I understand that, you know, it kind of have to, you know, things relax a little bit, and then you got to relight the fire. So I can appreciate that.
But the biological monitor is a, I mean, we
it seems like they should, like, perhaps it would be better if they reported directly and then you knew what.
Well, and like I said, I don't even know the new process. I know it's going great on Mad River Bridges right now, and they, I mean, construction, he's, and I've been out there to help design some mitigation slope bank stabilization. I've been working with the environmental monitor, the biological monitor. I mean, he's talking to the agencies, talking to our environmental. It's happening the way it's supposed to happen. The agencies are having, you know, it's a benefit for everyone. This was as far away as you could get from that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Noren.
Sebastian, thanks for coming up in front of us today. I had a question, and this actually, this event actually precedes your time, but I just have a question. The construction of this project anticipated several stream crossings by heavy equipment. And I'm just curious what you know of, what's your experience with the best management practices to move heavy equipment across a wetted stream channel?
Well, there's not too many. It's definitely, you have an immediate impact right then and there. And it's kind of a flash event. If you're talking about heavy equipment going across a live stream.
Yeah, and I'm not just talking, and let me just be more clear and forthright that, and this hasn't actually been explicitly discussed today, but there was an event in September 2006 of crossing the wetted stream channel that some of this equipment, a 330 cat excavator and a bulldozer, and I believe a big can went across this thing, and you know, pretty dirty going in. It wasn't about just the fact that they stir up bottom sediment.
I've seen that picture.
Do you have any thing to offer as far as I would imagine? I don't know if this wetted stream channel work was done by the time that you got there, but
it was all done. What would I offer to that issue?
Well, and what I'm specifically trying to get at is the BMP that would have been employed in the best of circumstances that you would expect as a contract or as the as Caltrans, as the resident engineer, if your contractor or subcontractor is going to cross a sediment-impaired water body with heavy equipment, what would have been the reasonable effort?
You make sure your equipment's clean, and you go real slow. Mm-hmm. And that's about the gist of it. And you pick the appropriate spot that's going to do the least, you know, the shallowest and the narrowest spot.
Yes.
And, you know, you make sure you just, I mean, there's lots of things, but make sure you're doing it only once, obviously, or as few times as possible, so plan your work. But that's not really a BMP. It kind of is a BMP.
Yeah, it probably is.
But we don't really lay anything down.
Right.
You know, we just make sure it's clean and go slow. The speed is definitely a, and don't turn, you know, make sure it's a orthogonal crossing.
Let me ask you, too, somewhat related to that, just the turbidity issue here. You mentioned that 4 turbidity meters were purchased directly for this job after you came on board.
Yeah.
Was it then your experience then that turbidity measurements got away from this subjective visual observation and measurement or categorization of visual observations, and were actual turbidity measurements taken thereon on this project for any turbidity measurements?
Yes, we did. I came aboard, and I'll be honest, it took me a while to get up to speed on all the permits. I remember having a conversation with Dean Pratt. He definitely explained what he was after, and this is where it comes down to interpretation. And I read it 100 times. I really, what took me talking to Dean, hey, what were you after when you wrote this? And he explained that he just wanted to document when there was turbidity, could they have some proof that it didn't go above a certain level or cause damage? And the way he explained it was, because if someone's driving by, that way I can have proof. They call in, yeah, we're on it or whatever. And that made sense to me. So we were doing turbidity measurements. However, I quickly called back because it just says upstream and downstream. It's really easy. It takes going out there and doing turbidity measurements to find flaws in things like that, because it was so easy to cheat. I mean, you go in there, okay, I'm 50 feet downstream. You just pick a spot. You almost needed to do turbidity measurements all the way across. I mean, it's, you know, I know what they're after, but that spec really didn't, you know, it was easy to do that and kind of, the spec wasn't detailed enough to get proof that they were after. And Dean recognized that. He just said, yeah, I know there's problems, but hey, at least it's something. just make sure that, you know, you guys are on it. And I, you know, right off the bat, I thought I had a good relationship going. I thought that they were up to speed, that I was on top of the contractor. We were making changes. You know, lots of changes were made. There's lots of things that we still fought about.
Well, and
but
frankly,
humidity measurements were that we did them. But again, it was somewhat arbitrary because, you know, you can imagine
understood.
It just says
understood.
40 feet and just says take a humidity measurement downstream, where downstream, because you just have a little plume right here that's, you know, 2 feet wide. You go downstream 50 feet. You know, it's like, well, I'm 50 feet downstream and I can't even find it. You still want me to take a turbidity measurement? It's one of the, you know.
No, I can appreciate that, and I could actually appreciate, you know, the challenges you faced coming onto a job that had been going on and sounds like it had significant issues that were not always related to environmental compliance, right? You had a whole lot of stuff going on here on a very big project. I'm curious, though, you're a young man that's in, I would imagine, this, you know, you have a lot of years in front of you as a resident engineer for Caltrans. So it sounds like things have been learned from this process that now carry on to jobs and processes that you're doing now. So there's a flip side to this. I'm curious about, you know, those outcomes. It surely sounds like some hard lessons were learned here. And that maybe things have at least... there's more of a recognition. There's a recognition of some of the things that did go wrong. And I think...
Oh, definitely.
And...
I think we... From Caltrans standpoint, is that what you're asking?
In general. Yeah. You know, I mean, I hear, too, that you had a permit that was, you know, that was open to interpretation, that was ambiguous, maybe, that wasn't... that maybe, you know, from the standpoint of how you read between those lines of turbidity is a great thing. You know, I mean, I understand that. I've done turbidity measurements myself. Yeah, I understand that. But I think that when you have a permit and you're talking, I see you had a 1602 permit. You've got a, you know, you've got all kinds of permits here and you've got all kinds of compliance things that you're trying to please all masters.
Right. And sometimes they conflict.
Well, and including regional board. And I guess I'm just curious about, you know, how we do this better, because this isn't going to be the last project.
Right. Well, I think my biggest thing about this was I think what went on in prior years, Caltrans used to attempt to get the permit, and we would tell agencies, you know, what do you want us to do to get the permit? And then they write that in instead of going, okay, what's the job? What are the impacts going to be? You know, we can't say that zero impacts, you know, we have to assume stuff's going to happen. And I guess what I'm saying is educated people that have knowledge of what's going to occur need to be the ones having the conversations about how to perform the compliance issues.
Agreed.
Because there's been too much. It says no, none of this. Well, none of this by this agency meant no extra that's egregious or above and beyond what's normal. No by this agency meant not a single drop.
Well, and the thing is, too, I think that there's some slight differences, though, I see in that this permit did allow things like crossing a wetted stream channel. It did allow for some turbidity here.
Right.
It didn't say zero.
Right.
There were allowed things to go on here.
Well, and the fact, I mean, what was actually permitted was pretty drastic. For the low water stream crossings, it would have taken some massive grading on the river bar to build up all that gravel to create the abutments for the two low water crossings. That river bar would have been destroyed in that area, and that wasn't done. I mean, that's, you know, you don't, that doesn't mean you get to go do other stuff, and doesn't mean you don't have to put in BMPs in other places, but that, I mean, it was permitted to do that, and that wasn't done. And that would have been more sediment right there than the whole rest of the job by many factors.
Well, and part of my point in asking you, this is a learning experience for me as well, right? I don't build bridges for a living. I can appreciate the effort that went into this. Yeah, I can also see some of the problems. I think it's readily apparent today, some of the problems. It's pretty well documented.
Yeah.
I appreciate your candor. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other panelists? Thank you. We'll move on to MCM's case presentation and testimony.
If we take just a short break just before we start.
You bet. How about we break for, we'll come back, look at half past. Will that work?
Yeah.
Give you about 5-10 minutes. In.
All right, thank you.